Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. This week on From the Vault, we remember the great Czechoslovakian composer Antonín Dvořák with a presentation called They Remember Dvořák, Pacifica Radio's 1970 program that won the prestigious Ohio State Award. The idea for this program came in 1967 when then KPFK music director William Malik met someone who actually knew Dvořák. It inspired William to look for more people who knew him and would end up recording the reminiscences of eight other Dvořák contemporaries and artfully wove these stories into a three-hour special. On this program, we present the second part, the time Dvořák spent in America from 1892 to 1895. But first, a little bit about Antonín Dvořák. Born on September 8, 1841, in the Austrian Empire now known as the Czech Republic, Dvořák would become one of the most prolific composers of all time. By the 1970s, he was already considered a significant composer, ultimately gaining the respect and friendship of both Johannes Brahms and Tchaikovsky. As his notoriety ascended to worldwide status, he would be invited to premiere his Symphony No. 7 in London in 1885. Then in 1892, American socialite Jeanette Thurber would invite Dvořák to be the director of the National Conservatory of Music in New York City. Our story tells how his American experience from Native American culture to contemporary American life inspired his compositions in those 3 years. Here is William Malik.
Antonín Dvořák Memory Book. Dvořák died in 1904, 63 years ago. Thus, you can imagine my surprise when 3 years ago I met a man who remembered him well. After this experience, I decided to make a point of finding others who recalled having had personal contact with Dvořák, in the hope that I might find enough material to prepare an oral history documentary on the composer for Pacifica Radio. The following is a sort of Dvořák memory book put together from eight of these reminiscences. Perhaps as a result of this program, others who remember Dvořák may come forward after this scrapbook appears on the air. I hope so. Of course, all the old people I've talked to were children when they knew Dvořák. How can they remember anything that happened so long ago? Well, sometimes old people can better remember what happened 70 years ago than what happened yesterday, and childhood impressions, in any case, number among the strongest we carry with us as time carries us its capricious ways. These now very old children had little conception of the significance of the strange, odd-habited composer with whom they came into daily contact. Some regret this, yet, in a way, they were fortunate. They had a chance to look at him, not through a cultivated set of non-responses, but straight on, as children do, and thus to know him as he really was. Listening to some of this material as I put this program together, I got the impression that, in some ways, the people who speak became children once again as they relived the hours spent with Dvořák so long ago. Dvořák was invited to come to America by Mrs. Jeanette M. Thurber, wife of a well-to-do New York grocer. Previously, she'd risked and lost a great deal of her husband's capital, attempting to create a company dedicated to singing opera in English, something perhaps to rival the Met, and was now busily engaged in founding a National Conservatory of Music. The institution was to boast such staff members as Victor Herbert and James Huneker. Mrs. Thurber had a special reason for inviting Dvořák. She wished to found an American National School of Composition. Her thoughts turned to Sibelius as well as Dvořák, but she didn't feel equal to the journey to Finland. She did, however, get as far as Vienna, and from there cabled Dvořák, inviting him to accept the conservatory directorship. Dvořák, however, was in no hurry to make such a move. Businessman musician Paul Sonnenschein, 80, who today lives in an old-style apartment catty-cornered across from Carnegie Hall in New York City, tells us why a young man named Joseph Kovarschik had a great deal to do with changing the composer's mind.
So, Dvorak gets this invitation, to which his reaction was very quick. I wouldn't dream of it, to go across the big water and risk the lives of my children, to be drowned and so forth. I wouldn't think of it. All right, so you ask me about Kovacic. Well, I try to tell you now, that's very interesting. Mr. Kovacic, who, incidentally speaking, in his last period of his life, was the first viola player in the New York Philharmonic Orchestra.
Oh.
And of which Mrs. Kovacic will tell you volumes, naturally. Well, he was born in a place in Iowa called Spillville, which incidentally has become famous since, not through Kovacic, but through Dvorak. But here's the story. Kovacic was, I think I've told you that, the son of the organist there.
In Spillville.
In Spillville. And the father was very proud of him, and like every Czech, be it in Czech, in Bohemia, be it in China, be it in the Philippines, wherever there's a Czech, there's a patriot for Bohemia. Mm-hmm. So, as a patriotic Czech in Spillville, he wanted his son to go to Prague to study under the great master Dvorak.
Right.
All right. So the young man went. One day, Dvorak goes into a violin maker's shop and told him the story. I could go to America, very proud, with a wonderful income, but I wouldn't dream of it. They're full of Indians and wild animals, and besides, I wouldn't even take a chance to go across the ocean with my children. God forbid that I ever would do that. So the violin maker says, well, but that's wonderful income. And you know, America seemed to be a civilized country. All the story about Indians and buffaloes and the ocean being so wild you drown, that's all not true anymore. Everything is improved. America is just like we are. So Dvorak says, who told you that? So he said, I will tell you. I won't tell you. The man who told me was here 5 minutes ago, and he is around the corner because he is looking at my window for violins. He goes around the corner. There is young Kovacic, and he calls him in to the shop where Dvorak was standing. So the violin maker says, look, do you know who that gentleman is with the big beard? That is our famous Dvorak. So Kovacic, right away, he was very excited to meet Dvorak. And Dvorak, because he never spoke, he was very, what do you call it?
Reticent?
Short-mouthed. If you don't talk much, like Schumann. So Dvorak right away says, you come from America? Jan Kovacic says, yes, I'm here to study the violin. And so Dvorak says, well, tell me about America. These are civilized people. So Kovacic just explained to him, there are people like you are, or like we are here, and they have a great love for music and all kinds of things which interested Dvorak to a great extent, until all of a sudden he says, all right, under those conditions I will go, but only again under one condition, if that boy goes with me. And I will teach him the violin wherever we are.
Amazing.
So, after a few days, it was all arranged. Jan Kovacsuk, who just led it in Prague, she got ready again to go back with Dvořák and the family, of which I showed you a picture.
Right.
Now the next thing, he, since that day, since early boyhood, he never moved away from him. Which, of course, Mrs. Kovacsuk again will tell you more details which mm-hmm. might interest you. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, he never moved away. And he was, servant for everything. He woke him in the morning. He brought him the coffee. They walked out either to mess or to look at locomotives. And they went as far as Central Park to see the doves from 17th Street.
Uh-huh.
They walked. That was Dvořák's style. Compagnard, or whatever you call it, the simple country folks, huh?
Dvořák arrived in New York, one still at that time without its characteristic skyscrapers, by the way, on September 27th, 1892. Mrs. Thurber had paved the way well for him. Press and musicians alike showed him every possible attention.
The Americans expect great things of me. And the main thing is, so they say, to show them to the promised land and kingdom of a new and independent art, in short, to create a national music. Now, if the small Czech nation can have such musicians, they say, why could not they, too, when their country and people is so immense? Now, forgive me for lacking a little in modesty, but I'm only telling you what the American papers are constantly writing. It is certainly both a great and splendid task for me, and I hope that with God's help I shall accomplish it. There is more than enough material here and plenty of talent. I have pupils from as far away as San Francisco. They are mostly poor people, but at our institute, teaching is free of charge. Anybody who is really talented pays no fees. I have only 8 pupils, but some of them very promising. And now something about our domestic affairs. We live in 17th Street East, 327, only 4 minutes from the school, and are very satisfied with the flat. Mr. Steinway sent me a piano immediately, a lovely and, of course, free of charge, so that we have one nice piece of furniture in our sitting room. Besides this, we have 3 other rooms and a small room, furnished, and pay $80 a month. A lot for us, but the normal price here. We have breakfast and supper at home and go to a boarding house for dinner.
It pleased Dvořák very much that Negroes and other minority groups were admitted to the conservatory. Indeed, it may have had much to do with his accepting Mrs. Thurber's offer in the first place. Congress granted the institution its title because tuition was free to all those who could not afford to pay. The following comes from the Iowa State Records. As spring approached, Dvořák wanted more than ever to escape from the city. He was anxious to work on some new music that he had in mind. One day, Joseph Kovacsuk suggested that Dvořák accompany him on a visit to Iowa. Apparently his master did not hear, for he paid no attention to the remark and made no comment. A few days later, however, he quite unexpectedly asked Kovacsuk more about Spillville. Kovacsuk explained that Spillville was a little bohemian settlement, where his native language was spoken on the street, that it was peaceful and quiet as well as beautiful. Several days passed. Then Dvořák asked his assistant to draw a map of Spillville, indicating every house, every street, every person who lived in each house, and what they did. That was all. Dvořák made no comments, but when some friends of his from South Carolina tried to persuade him to go there for his rest, he informed them that he was going to Spillville.
My wish to return to Bohemia will not be realized this year. We have decided otherwise. The children and my sister-in-law, Mrs. Kotitska, are coming here and will leave Prague on the 23rd of May on board the Havel from Bremen, so that, God grant, on the 31st of May, shall I look upon the faces of my dear and long-missed children. Then we shall go straight to Chicago, have a look at the exhibition, and then set out for our summer visoka in the state of Iowa for the Czech village of Spillville, where the teacher and the parish priest and everything is Czech. And so I shall be among my own folks and am looking forward to it very much. The teacher, Mr. Kovařík, from Písek and here 26 years, and the priest, Mr. Bílý, a very lively fellow, so they say, from Budějovice in Bohemia, will be the people with whom I shall be in closest contact. I shall have pigeons there, and maybe we shall even play darda. How grand it will be. The priest has two pairs of ponies, and we shall ride to Protivin, a little town near Spillville. Here in America, there are names of towns and villages of all nations under the sun. The state of Iowa, to which we are going, is 1,300 miles from New York, but here, such distance is nothing. 36 hours by express, and we are there. It is farther than from where you are to London. Very soon we are going to see Buffalo, a town near Niagara, and so we shall see the gigantic waterfalls. How I'm looking forward to it. And now, what shall I write to you about? I have not much work at school, so that I have enough time for my own work, and am now just finishing my E minor symphony. I take great pleasure in it, and it will differ very considerably from my others. Well, the influence of America must be felt by everyone who has any nose at all.
Once more, the Iowa state records tell us that it was a lovely day in June when Antonín Dvořák, his wife, their six children, a sister, a maid, and his assistant, the younger Kovařík, alit from a train in the little station of Kalmar, 11 miles from Spillville. The older Kovařík sent the family on to the village while he remained to look after the baggage. Upon his arrival in Spillville, he found Dvořák strolling about, smoking his pipe, quite at home, and apparently very much pleased with his surroundings. The younger Kovařík goes on to tell us more about Dvořák's first days. In our family, mother was always the early bird, and when on the following morning she caught sight of the master at 5 o'clock in the morning, walking up and down in front of the school, she got a great fright as she thought something unpleasant must have happened to them in the house. She ran out and began asking the master what had happened. She didn't know he was also an early riser. Whereupon, the master replied,
"Nothing happened, and yet, a great deal. Imagine, I was walking there in the wood along by the stream, and after 8 months, I heard again the singing of birds. And here the birds are different from ours. They have much brighter colors, and they sing differently, too. And now I'm going to have breakfast, and after breakfast, I shall come again."
One bird in particular fascinated Dvořák on his stroll that morning. A bird, odd-looking, all red, except for black wings. It must have been the first morning that he saw this bird, because within 3 days he'd completed sketches for his string quartet in F major, subtitled The American Quartet, and he put the song of this bird into the scherzo of that quartet. Judging from the shape of a motive in the first part of the scherzo material, the song must belong to the scarlet tanager, a bird still common in the North American Midwest. You've been hearing him singing in the background. Now let's sneak up on him and salt his musical tail. Here's the related musical idea in Dvořák's quartet. Well, perhaps it would be better to slow down the bird's song to bring it more in line with the idea in the quartet. Dvorak referred to the tanager as a damned bird. Perhaps because it sang its song so rapidly, he was hard put to note it down properly. Here's Dvorak's quartet idea once again. And now here's the bird's call, slowed down. Well, perhaps it would be only fair to the bird involved if we were now that we've heard its call from Dvorak's angle to hear it, so to speak, from the bird's ear view. So first, here's the call of the scarlet tanager back to normal speed. And now here's Dvorak's quartet idea turned into bird music. Dvorak finished the scoring of his quartet within 2 weeks. He was impatient to hear it played, so Kovarchik's father put together a quartet consisting of Dvorak, himself, and his 2 children. Probably, that reading of the first scherzo wasn't quite as polished as the performance by Prague's Smetana String Quartet we hear now.
Thank you.
That morning, Dvorak did come back, as he said he would, after breakfast, and he asked Mrs. Kovarchik what time was Mass, because he wanted to play the organ. Mass, held at the St. Wenceslas Church, still there, high on a hilltop in Spillville, was at 7. Meantime, the other members of the master's family had appeared, and we went to church. The master at the organ began playing God Before Thy Majesty, and we started singing. But the old women looked up in surprise to the choir to see what was happening. They were not accustomed to be disturbed at silent Mass by the organ and singing. And so the master sat at the organ every day, except the days he spent in Chicago, Omaha, and St. Paul. The old women got used to the master's disturbing them and began to sing too, which pleased the master very much. Things progressed so far, indeed, that after Mass some granny or granddad ventured to address him, "Mr. Dvorak, the singing was fine today, and what will you be playing us tomorrow?" Mary Klimisch, who still lives in Spillville today, was a little girl at that time. Today, every morning, she still takes a walk throughout that little town Dvorak strolled through some 74 years ago.
Mrs. Klimisch, would you mind telling me how old you are?
84 years.
84 years old. You recall the time when Anton Dvorak came to spend a summer in Spillville?
Yes, I played with his children. The oldest one was Otilia, and the second one was Anna. Of course, they called her Anda. And then third one was Mary, that was Mashka. And then was the older boy, and then was Anton, and the younger boy was Aro. With him I played mostly because he was my closest my age.
Mm-hmm.
And the youngest one was Loisichka, that's Luis.
How old were you at that time?
Oh, 11 or 12, I guess.
What kind of a man was he, as you recall?
Well, of course, I knew him, but I didn't have anything to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I thought he was very old because he had beard, and it seemed to me he's very old.
Did he go walking with the children?
Most of the time he went alone because he listened to the birds and thinking about his music, I guess. And he generally had some papers in hand, paper and pencil, and writing down, I guess, whatever he heard.
Some people say that Dvorak used to write his ideas down on his cufflinks.
Yes, I guess he did, because his washerwoman, Mrs. Benda, she used to complain that there was all kinds of scribbling on his cuffs when he washed his shirt.
I wonder if he ever complained that she went and washed some good ideas off of his cuffs.
I think he put it on before he sent the shirt to wash, I guess. Mostly he was, I guess, where the park is now. See, right there in that place. Well, there's a memorial for him there.
And that's where the river is.
Yeah, uh-huh. He liked to listen to the... By the river, used to sit and listen to the birds. Of course, there were a lot of them there.
There aren't as many now?
Oh, I think there are quite a bit, but maybe not so many.
Primarily, what kind of birds are around in this area?
Well, in summer there could be all kinds of birds. Well, even here, when I moved here, that they were more because it was kind of out in the country, you know. There were quite a bit of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, robins, of course, those are the, that would be like the best. They're quite plentiful.
Were there places in town that he liked to go?
Well, I guess he went with some of the older people here. One of them was my father of my husband. He used to go with him sometimes, John Klimisch. Sometimes they used to play orchestra at Kovarchik's home, you know,
mm-hmm.
because Kovarchik's children were, they played. One girl played cello, and then some of them played violins, and of course each of them had something. And his wife, she used to sing quite a bit. She used to sing in church.
Did Dvorak play?
Oh, yeah, he played. I remember he used to play that, it's a Czech song. Bože před tvou velebností na kolena padáme. That means, Your Majesty God, we fall on our knees.
What instrument did he play it on?
Well, that organ, that it's a tuning church.
At the St. Wenceslas Church?
Yes, uh-huh.
I wonder if I could get the sister to play that for me while I'm here.
I think she would.